Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. I was going to ask our next guest, Brian Jeffries, Lansing City Councilman, to react to some of the comments from Kathy Dunbar, but that's not possible since we never made connections with Kathy. We will reschedule that. We did talk with Jessica Yorko yesterday, so eventually I think we're going to have talked with everyone on City Council about this issue and definitely want to talk to our next guest. As an attorney and someone who has a little different perspective on labor management issues, especially what is happening with the Brownfield situation and Gillespie Group down at Marketplace, and that is Brian Jeffries. Hello, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Jack. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to get your take on this, and I know that you cast a vote, which, as it turned out, was not enough. You needed six, I believe, right, to get a change?
Well, what we did on Monday night, it was actually a vote to actually put on the agenda an item that would allow us to vote on whether or not we should appeal the decision that the judge made. We needed six based on our rules to get that item up on the agenda. We were only able to get five, so that failed, and therefore we were not able to actually deal with the substance or the merit of the issue, which was the appeal.
All right, and what does that mean for the city of Lansing? Obviously, this project now in position to go forward, and what does it mean for labor in the capital city?
Well, you know, as to this particular brownfield and project, or at least as to the brownfield will move forward. We have until, I believe, next Monday to actually file an appeal, but I think that decision was pretty much made at our Monday night meeting. Mm-hmm. So as to that project, with that brownfield, that's going to move on as is, and as the developer puts together his plans as well as his contractors and subs and everything else, he'll just move ahead on that. There was a discussion, though, in terms of the labor piece of it that came up when we received the plan for approval, and that was initially brought forward in a project labor agreement request to tag that on to this particular development. We were told specifically from our city attorney that legally we could not do that, and that was not done. But it did give rise to the issue, and really this came from something that started several years ago when we initially put the development agreement together. Dave Hollister and Joel Ferguson called a meeting together with labor and the developer and asked that they sit down and put together some sort of agreement in which they could work out their differences and on this project move forward with organized labor as a piece of it. And that simply just did not happen. And
why?
I don't know. I was not sitting at the table. I was not involved in any of those negotiations or discussions. But when it came to council, we got it, and we had about 2 weeks to work on it. I think there, a number of us were surprised because we thought that had been done. And that's why there was a discussion at that time relative to that particular issue. And so it played out as it did. The project and the brownfield will move forward, and it'll be up to Pat to obtain the rest of the financing and get the project going.
There are some very bitter feelings, I think, between developers and one in particular and labor now in the city of Lansing. And the question is whether labor is being ignored or taken advantage of or circumvented. Do you get that feeling with all of this development we've seen go on in downtown Lansing?
Well, you know, you look at some of the projects down there, like the Accent Fund. That's a project labor agreement. You look at Sparrow and all of the expansion that they did a couple of years ago. That was project labor agreement. All of the work on the LCC campus, both the east and the west, the whole new west campus was a project labor agreement. So the organized labor has been definitely a major player and role, and it's because they can bring certain things to the table in terms of on time and on budget commitments.
Why didn't that work this time, Brian?
I wasn't sitting at the table. I don't know. We tried to get information in terms of cost. Is this a cost issue? We couldn't get any of the specific information, at least within the committee process. And again, we didn't really have a lot of time to put that together. But this is, let me just tell you where I'm coming from and the way I look at this. In any of these development initiatives that we get in front of us, I analyze those on a return on investment kind of basis. What is the city going to get for what it gives up? And I think your listeners ought to know that the city over the last 4 years has given out over $177 million worth of abatements. Mm-hmm. That's a huge amount of money, particularly when we look at our budget and the budget deficits that we have. And, you know, one could reasonably argue that these incentives and abatements actually add to that, to those deficits. But I think in balance, and when we balance out the priorities, I think we've done the right thing. But in terms of the return on investment for that expenditure, you know, we look at what kind of development are we getting, what kind of businesses are these manufacturing, is it housing, what kind of jobs are going to be created. We do get income tax, so we want to create those jobs that are going to earn the most money, so we get some income tax payment back in the city. And as to the labor piece of it, and I think when you talk to organized labor, they're asking questions not necessarily about project labor agreements or even prevailing wage. They're talking about a community standard. They want wages paid on these jobs that, one, will you know, allow these people to take home a paycheck that's going to keep the roof over their head, put a meal on the table. It's going to support working families.
What's wrong with that idea?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And when you put in a public investment into the equation to the tune that we do, and particularly on this project, we're talking about $4.5 to $5 million, we can answer those questions. We should be asking those questions. We should be saying, this is what has to happen, because once we pay those wages to those workers, they're going to go back into the community, right. They're going to buy services and goods, and that money's going to fold over several times within our communities. Right. And when you talk to labor, they're talking about local labor too. They want people in this area to do it. They're not saying it has to be all organized labor or union labor that's doing the job, but they feel that they can be competitive in what they offer if there is a community standard that supports working families, and they can be a part of that.
All right. You talked about these abatements, and it's a pretty staggering number.
Mm-hmm.
What would the city of Lansing look like today without those?
Well, just look downtown. You can see the successes we've had. And
those projects might not have been built, right, in many cases?
Oh, absolutely. I think a number of them would not have been built. And some of the ones that we've approved, even though we've approved some quite elaborate incentives, particularly with the Capital Club Tower project that we're looking at, even with those incentives that we've gotten out there, they still can't afford to build them. I mean, the economy is just that tough right now. And so, you know, again, as I said, in terms of priority, I think what the council has done and what the administration has done in Lansing has been a good thing. We've marched lockstep forward into that, approving all of these. This project, in terms of the marketplace, was the only one that did not get council approval out of the last 4 or 5 years that we've been seriously working on these initiatives. So I think that's a pretty good record. I think it speaks for itself. And
Pat Gillespie said that he felt that the rug had been pulled out from under him, that terms had been changed, or he was working with a different idea. Where did that come from?
I don't know what where he's coming from. We've got a development agreement in place which outlines the process that had to be followed. It was not followed, and I'm being very clear about this. It was followed on the city side. It was not followed on the developer side. And by that I mean the problem I had with this particular project, what was supposed to happen was before the sale of that property to the developer was to come to the city and lay out his development. You know, these are the 5 buildings we're going to build. This is what we're building. These are the mixed uses that are going in there. And then we were going to work with him and lay out what were the incentives that we could give him to build those buildings. And then on top of all of that, with that in mind, he was going to present us with proof of financing. None of that ever happened. He purchased the property and then comes to us and says, just on this first 2 pieces of the development, I need this amount of incentives. And again, asking us to approve something without knowing what the rest of the development is going to be, what the rest of the cost to the city for that development is going to be. And without that information, I didn't think I could reasonably make that decision to approve that project.
This is not going away. Maybe this particular deadline will pass, but there are going to be other issues and other opportunities to evaluate project labor agreements and these kinds of incentives, brownfield incentives, etc. And Brian, we appreciate your time and your insight on this. We'll talk with you again soon.
Great. Thank you, Jack.